But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests. And tonight we have with us William McElhenney, and I've known William for over 20 years or more. He's one of those people who's been researching what's going on behind the scenes and has been trying to put together an understanding, connecting the dots, as it were. How do you make any sense out of what's going on in the world today? Well, without further ado, thanks very much for being with us tonight, Will.
Well, it's so nice to be back with you again, Sam.
Well, I'll just go ahead and pick up. I'm going to have to speak up just a little bit. And why don't you, for our listeners who don't know who you are, just give us a little of your background.
All right. I'm a member of the John Birch Society, have been since 1965, a life member since I was 18 years old. And it was the good fortune I had, as of course is true of Stan also, that we knew a man named Robert Welch, the founder and president of the John Birch Society, and gained access to a tremendous amount of understanding about the cause of problems in the world that were continuing to accelerate a massive threat to individual freedom, not just in the United States, but around the world, and pose a danger of a totalitarian world government being imposed on us. We came to understand that better, and I have collected as much as I could the original primary source material to document the ongoing conspiratorial drive for world government that you do such a great job, Stan, of discussing on your program.
All right, fine. Well, of course, you've been at this for a long, long time. That's really 40 years.
Yeah.
And that would make you, you're getting to be pretty old now.
Yeah, I'm no longer the boy wonder of the John Birch Society. I'm 55.
All right. Well, now, of course, as you study these things and you recognize that behind everything that's going on, there is a force. And, of course, there is a world communist movement. It's certainly not dead, as we've been told.
Mm-hmm.
What's the relationship between this world movement and the Council on Foreign Relations?
Well, let's take the context once again. I know you have many dedicated listeners, obvious from the response I had to our prior 2 hours. But let's establish the context once again briefly in summary. We're talking about a conspiracy. A conspiracy is a human activity involving more than one person in which the parties to the activity are promoting basically the same or common objectives. Objectives that are, by reasonable standards, personally harmful, evil, or destructive, and they're doing this without advertising in advance fully to their intended victims what they're planning to do, or working in secret. And this conspiratorial drive as a physical, ongoing, continuous structure goes back to 1776 in southern Germany, when a network of secret societies was formed as the Order of the Illuminati. And the purpose of this network of secret societies was to destroy all then existing political and religious institutions, all traditional religious faiths, and all existing forms of government, whether democracy or monarchy. Out of the chaos they would produce in the future, they hoped to establish a solution in the hands of themselves or their successors, namely a totalitarian world government.
All right, and of course, the Illuminati was a real organization. I know my grandfather told my father about it at the early part of the 1900s, but this is not something they talk about in schools. Only if you begin looking into secret societies do you realize there's not one but many secret societies out there today. Well, Bill, go ahead, pick up the story then.
Well, this network of secret societies in the late 18th century provided the subversive leadership in France for the horror known as the French Revolution and spawned all of the totalitarian movements of the 19th century, including all of the socialist movements, the communist movement, and in the late 19th century and early 20th century, the various totalitarian movements such as fascism and Nazism. the movements that came out of the Illuminati led to virtually all of the revolutions, revolts, wars, assassinations of heads of state that occurred throughout the 19th century and led up to the First World War, which was engineered diplomatically in the governments involved by agents of this conspiracy for the purpose of providing an excuse for world government. At that time, after World War I, it was to be the League of Nations. It was not successful because the United States did not join. This conspiracy, engineered by a very complex process, but very directly and totally, the Second World War, and got the United States into it, so that after the Second World War, there would be an excuse for a world government structure, namely the United Nations, which we would all be obliged to support to prevent any such terrible world war from occurring again.
All right. Well, what was the relationship between the Illuminati and the Council on Foreign Relations?
Well, one of the groups that evolved out of the 19th century secret societies established by the Illuminati, and the continuity in this case happens to be the Carbonari movement in Italy, giving rise to secret societies in which matriculated members of the British Fabian Socialist movement and the Theosophical Society of Helena Blavatsky and Ani Besant. Some of the people they were able to influence became active in an organization that evolved into the Council on Foreign Relations after World War I. A similar organization earlier had been created in Britain. And the purpose of this organization was to consolidate influence over the people who would be making foreign policy decisions, and to use the universities and tax-exempt foundations and promote a dogma, a doctrine of world government and the surrender of American sovereignty to a world government.
All right, hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Bill McAlee. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Bill was just saying that the out of the certainly the revolutionary movement in the mid 1900s, we're talking about the period when Helena Petrovna Blavatsky was organizing the Theosophical Society, the 1880s when the Fabian Socialist movement was created. Out of that movement then came the movement that Cecil Rhodes created, and then of course we find them moving to create the First World War and the Second World War, and both wars were created for one purpose, and that was to create a world government. The First World War was created to establish the League of Nations, and when that failed, why, they were determined to have a Second World War and to create the United Nations. But still, we still do not have our world government. That's why, at least in my opinion, we have to have a third world war, and I really feel that this is of the very foundation of why we've really attacked Afghanistan, why we've really attacked Iraq, why we are going somehow or other to have military action taken against Iran and Syria, if we cannot peacefully overthrow those regimes there. And I think they are trying to do that, but I really believe they want a third world war, which will involve in some form or another an attack on Iran. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you're quite right. The structure of the United Nations and our membership in it has led to the management of so-called regional wars, so-called operations other than war, wars within various countries, Korea and Vietnam and other dozens of other places, where American troops have been sent without a declaration of war, but under direct or indirect United Nations management. And so after World War II and our joining the United Nations, this structure had to be strengthened over subsequent decades by using it supposedly as an international peacekeeping or world army activity, that we would subordinate our military sovereignty to this body. It would prevent a world war, supposedly, and it would establish the precedent of our armed services being incorporated into a world armed forces under the umbrella of the United Nations.
Well, of course, today, most of the countries of the world are firmly against America taking any military action against Iran. Certainly, both Russia and China, which are aligned with Iran, are opposing America's military attack. If we attack, we're just going to have to totally ignore the United Nations and this rule of world law that we espouse so repeatedly and so loudly, If America's going to attack Iran, I think they're going to have to go on their own. What are your thoughts?
Well, that could be just as unpopular as the military invasion of Iraq has become. But still, at the same time, disputes and conflicts, like the Middle Eastern dispute between the communist-controlled Palestinian Liberation Organization being imposed upon the State of Israel with the connivance of traitors in the American and Israeli government supporting this scheme, that ongoing problem provides potentially an excuse for the United Nations to intervene, establish a protectorate over the entire area, of course put the management of that protectorate in Soviet-controlled hands, but supposedly solve a problem that might lead to a world war. At any point after we continue to accelerate these crises and local wars, the UN can intervene or be brought in as the solution of a world government to prevent a world war.
Well, do you think that we are going to attack Iran? What are your thoughts on that?
It looks like there and a number of other possibilities are open to people in our government who want to keep problems going. Remember, the conspiratorial strategy operates is to cause, on the national level, economic and social problems to justify totalitarian central government controls, and it functions on the international scale to worsen and prolong existing diplomatic crises, ruptures, and clashes, and regional or local conflicts so that they can be maintained and accelerated and used as excuses for world government or for a world army in which we would have our military services subordinated.
Well, my concern is that I believe our leaders are intent upon some sort of a confrontation with Iran. I believe if we do that, we're going to inflame the anger and hostility of the entire Muslim world against the United States, and I believe we are going to provoke terrorist attacks in the United States. I believe that there are terrorists here. I believe that there are Iranian terror cells. I think our government knows who they are and has them totally under control. And I believe, of course, that they work in conjunction with the communists who are here. And I think our government wants this sort of violence in our society because that will allow them to massively increase their control over the lives of every law-abiding American citizen. And you have to have some sort of an incident before the American people will be willingly accept a dictatorship.
Of course. And the purpose of 9/11 and the intensification of terrorist incidents in the last 6 years has been to provide an excuse for the incredibly totalitarian violations of individual rights and intrusion into private property and personal effects and papers and privacy that constitutes the body of what's called the Patriot Act. And the European arrest warrant in European countries right now is a very similar totalitarian strategy, which many people would never have considered accepting if they hadn't been able to engineer the excuse for it in the form of this terrorist activity. So, if they want to keep regional or local warfare going and conflicts going in the Middle East so that they can use them as an excuse for world government down the road, having the United States invade Iran would be just another way of doing that.
And I think for our listeners out there who say this is going to be crazy talk, I would point out that we carry a video. It's called Jihad in America. It consists of film footage, I assume shot by our intelligence agencies, back in 1988. 1988, where the head of Al-Qaeda, the man who formed it, Azam. Anyway, he was here in Oklahoma City talking about jihad, blood riding in the streets here in America. He was killed later that year, and then, of course, the following year. Another of his followers, they have all of this film footage. They have them, you know, at their training, their terrorist training camps in upstate New York. They knew all about this in 1988.
Of course.
So why didn't they do anything about it? Because they wanted this. This was being funded by our good friends in Pakistan and by our good friends in Saudi Arabia and by our good friends in the CIA, creating the best enemy that money could possibly buy. And this is all well documented in a number of books that were written, you know.
And it is the same strategy and pattern that you and I both have observed going back to 1917 and the Bolshevik Revolution.
Right.
That the Soviet structure in Soviet Russia and other communist countries has been kept alive and fed and given all of its military, industrial, agricultural, and economic wealth and technology by the United States overwhelmingly, and the technology transferred to them always in transactions guaranteed in terms of payment by U.S. taxpayers.
Amen to that. And, of course, what is so difficult for the American people to believe is that from 1917, 1918 on, there was a constant infusion of money from people associated with our Federal Reserve banks and our corporations and our great private banks into Russia to maintain communism. It would have collapsed otherwise. In other words, we created the best enemy money could buy, and you have to ask yourself why. And for those that like to document it, we have books written by Professor Sutton. We have a video I shot with Professor Sutton back in 1980 called The Best Enemies Money Could Buy, where he goes into how we finance the Russians, how we finance the Chinese communists, how we finance the North Vietnamese during the Vietnam War to keep the war going.
That's right.
Nobody's ever asked how this little country, about the size of the state of Mississippi, could withstand the might of America, the mightiest nation in the world, for 10 years and defeat them.
Lives of American servicemen, tens of thousands of them, were sacrificed in Korea and Vietnam in a struggle which was actually being controlled on both sides by the communists.
Well, or by the people here, whether we want to call them communists, they're internationalists, really. They have the same goals.
What I meant by that was, as you know, in addition to the communists being in control of the Korean communist side and the Vietnamese communist side, everything we were doing in Korea directly under the United Nations command and indirectly in Vietnam by virtue of the SITO Treaty, the CETO Treaty being subservient to United Nations authority, all the orders that were coming to our field commanders in Korea and Vietnam during both wars first passed over the desk of the UN Undersecretary General for Political and Security Council Affairs, the so-called UN Military Secretary, who has always been a Soviet communist, either a Soviet national or a satellite nation national. And no wonder the communists were able to get advance warning of the orders coming to our troops from the Pentagon because they passed over the desk of the Soviet agent at the United Nations first.
Well, of course, the question is, why would our leaders do something that stupid unintentionally? And there has to be some other force behind this that has motivated the people who control the United States to betray our soldiers, to betray our nation, and it really is this desire for a world government. That's why we're not enforcing our immigration laws. They really want to destroy the United States.
They want to cause problems internationally because they have an international solution of a totalitarian world government they want to impose.
You're absolutely right. We'll be back here in just a moment. We'll welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, Bill, let's go ahead and sort of explore these ideas. Do you see that there's any sort of spiritual component to what motivates these people within our government who seem to be so intent upon destroying our heritage?
Well, certainly it's hard for rational, principled, law-abiding citizens to understand the motivation of someone who would deliberately promote the destruction of vast numbers of human lives in order to cause wars or to cause terrorism, and use that turnaround and use that as an excuse for a world government, or the threat of terrorism or criminality, use that as an excuse for a worldwide police force. We're talking about people who have subordinated any sense of traditional Judeo-Christian morality to the wind and are pursuing their goal, primarily in this case, a goal of sharing that total power that they hope will be imposed in the structure of a world government. And the conspiracy that I referred to earlier, which was founded as the Illuminati, consisted of a lot of activists who promoted the destructive objectives for a variety of personal reasons, sometimes just because what they benefited, how they benefited from it directly. But the leadership of this conspiracy, what we might call the authority level in charge of long-term planning, has always been diabolically sinister and what we would call satanic in its inspiration. People ask the very reasonable question, why would somebody in the 1770s plan a conspiracy to take over the world when they knew at that time that they would never live to see it carried out? Well, it's because they had a satanic religious idealism that led them to start this destructive process just for the purpose of promoting destruction. This is something that rational people generally can't understand, why someone would want to do that. But the people who run the conspiracy have a reverse theological motivation. The moral principles related to Judeo-Christian ethics and beliefs and the God of the Christians and the Jews is their devil. And they believe in a system that might be described as Manichaeism. Their deity is Satan or Lucifer, the one they worship and the one they're promoting, and the goal of doing that is to promote chaos. They are fighting and warring against the principles of Judeo-Christian morality that are common to most anyone who would be listening to this broadcast.
And I think that is so important. I don't think that most Americans today even have any idea who Mani was, what Manichaeism is, and yet it was a very important religious movement, and it is basically a dualistic movement.
It's a dualistic mirror image reversal of what we think of in terms of Judeo-Christian theology and morality.
And so I think that this is one thing that most people who've talked about this world conspiracy, this movement to effort to bring about a world government, have totally missed, and that's the spiritual aspect of it, because it really doesn't make sense unless you do consider the spiritual implications of it. And this I think is the almost the lost key. And this is of course what it took me almost 20 years to begin to put together the dots and begin to connect them.
Right.
We'll be right back just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I had asked off the air what he thought about the spiritual component. Of course, he recognizes, as I do, that there is a satanic component to what's going on. And he spoke of something called Manichaeism. And, of course, this was originated long, long ago by a man named Mani, who actually had many, many followers. And they've been around. This is several thousand years old. So would you explain for our listeners now, and don't be afraid to repeat yourself, what Manichaeism is and how it applies to what's going on today?
I have perhaps mispronounced it, but I call it Manichaeism or Manichaeism. This is a religious system or doctrine that is a reversal of Judeo-Christian morality and theology. The God of the Christians and the Jews is the devil in their system, and the Satan or Lucifer within Judeo-Christian theology is the God or the angel of light that these people worship. And therefore, what you and I understand as a result of our study is that the authority level, the long-term planning level of this conspiracy, which began as the Illuminati, has a religious idealism. They're not atheists. Now, there are many communists and atheists and pragmatic businessmen and unprincipled politicians who promote the objectives of this conspiracy. But the top-level leadership of it, the planning and long-term strategy leadership of this master conspiracy from the beginning has been formally satanic in its religious idealism. And that's what motivated them to promote a cause which they might never see the final outcome in their lifetime.
And it's interesting that you've come to the same conclusion that I have. And for our listeners, of course, there were many ancient religions. One of them was Zoroastrianism, which believed that there were two gods. There was the good god and the bad god, or two sides of the same god, one being a good side and the other being a bad side. Manichaeism, believing that there were two gods, but that they had the true god. They worship Satan, and of course we worship the wrong god.
Right, exactly.
I was reading something recently in Morals and Dogma, written by Albert Pike, and he was talking about the god that they worshipped, and then there was a lesser god who created the heaven and the earth.
Yes.
You know, it takes you a moment. You have to read that again. What do you mean a lesser god created the heaven and the earth?
Yes. System of theology and a consequent system of morality, which is a perverted mirror image of Judeo-Christian theology.
And, of course, almost everything here is simply a mirror image of Christianity. For instance, the logo of the Trilateral Commission. If you look at it very carefully, you'll notice in the very center is an upside-down broken cross. Then, of course, surrounded by three sixes. That is the most powerful organization probably in the world, probably in many respects more powerful than the Council on Foreign Relations. Why would they have a logo with an upside-down broken cross in the center, surrounded by three sixes? Certainly some of the most powerful men in the world belong to it. It was organized by Zygmunt Brzezinski, who is the architect of everything bad that has happened in,
At least since the Carter administration, yeah.
Yeah, he was instrumental in overthrowing the Shah of Iran and bringing the Ayatollah Khomeini and the radical Islamic regime to power in Iran in 1979 when Zygmunt Brzezinski was the National Security Advisor for Jimmy Carter. And at the time, I asked myself, why in heaven's name would Brzezinski have overthrown the Shah, who certainly was, he was a tyrant, but he was more or less a benevolent tyrant.
He was a friend and ally of the United States, and he was a strong bastion in the way of communism in the Middle East.
Right, and so we overthrew him and we installed this radical Islamic regime that today, you know, we're threatening to go to war with. Didn't make any sense in 79, but if you realize there's long-range planning, everything makes a lot of sense today.
Well, I would say that's exactly right. I would say that the personnel and direction of Iran since the betrayal of the Shah of Iran by the American government has been primarily Soviet military, funded by the United States directly and indirectly, but primarily Soviet military operatives who are pretending to be Muslim.
And, of course, I'm sure they're working within Iran today. They're working all throughout the Middle East. There was the Soviets who were helping Saddam Hussein prepare for our invasion there in 2003.
Right.
And, of course, they were giving the Soviets, the Iraqis, all sorts of information on what we were doing militarily. But, of course, they don't want the American people to know that. They're supposed to be our friends. We've done everything we could to help them, to build them up, to provide the funding for their oil industry, which is now the second largest oil industry in the world. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is William McElhinney. And, of course, we're talking about really what's going on in the Middle East, and until you begin to understand that nothing is as it appears to be. And of course, most people look upon the Soviets as our enemy, and there are many people in Russia who look upon them that way, but they do not understand that from the very inception, people in the United States have funded communism, have helped communism, have given them the technology, have given them the wherewithal to build up their military and to sustain their ruthless dictatorship. And that is so foreign to what the American people have been taught. And the same thing is true during Vietnam, why we gave massive loans to Russia so they would have the money to give the loans to North Vietnam to provide them with the fighter planes that shot down our planes, the anti-aircraft batteries that shot down our planes, the trucks that carried the supplies down the Ho Chi Minh Trail to kill American boys.
Yeah,
it was a great war because we fought. We financed both sides.
Financed both sides, and the communists controlled the outcome on both sides.
Well, of course, it's how we refer to our leaders. Are they communists, or are they globalists, internationalists, who are motivated by the same spiritual force?
Well, the actual management of the war was in communist hands through the United Nations and through CETO, but our policymakers were using the war as an excuse for world government and just wanting to drag it out and make it last as long as possible, no matter how many victims, in order to justify demoralize our people and to promote world government.
And of course, I think what people have forgotten what happened during that time, it was during those years of Vietnam, And before that, that did God and prayer out of our schools. They changed the immigration laws that got us into the terrible situation we are. In 1965, they repealed the McCarran Immigration Act. They found a woman had the right to, abort their child in 1973 before the war ended. They began to centralize all power in Washington, D.C. And Vietnam was a great diversion. It was a great diversion to take its attention away from what was happening here at home. Just as in many ways what's going on in Iraq takes us away from what's going on here at home and is being used to justify the imposition of police state techniques and police state powers by our government. Would you agree with that or disagree?
Oh, yes, because every time any government goes to war, it increases its power, usually with the support of its citizens, the patriotic, naive, gullible, well-intentioned support of its citizens. Whenever government goes to war, it justifies increasing its power, increasing the amount of money.
Hold that off right there, Bill. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, William McElhenney. And before we go on, Bill, I want you to get your web page out. I want you to get your telephone number out so people will know how to reach you. And then, of course, our telephone number, if you'd like to call us here at the station. Maybe you disagree with what William is saying. Maybe you disagree with what I'm saying. Give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But how can people get in touch with you and get your great...
I have a website which I would love to refer to your listeners, and many of your listeners have already contacted me to get this information. If anybody listening would like to look at the material that is related to the context of our discussion tonight, they can contact me, send me an email, and then I will send them the website links that they can go to that will give them a lot of additional information. My email address is WHM, that's WHM, those three initials, at earthlink.net. Earthlink is one word, earthlink.net, WHM at earthlink.net. Or call me at 310-275-3194 and leave your email address clearly and legibly, and I will contact you.
One more time, get your telephone number out.
Okay, 310-275-3194.
All right, fine. If you'd like to get hold of William, he's got a lot of fascinating information. You used to put on a seminar for two or three days. Are you still doing that?
Mercifully, Stan, that was done several times, and it was only 9 hours because my voice disintegrated by the end of the 9 hours. And I ended up doing a lot more of those that were 2 to 3 hours in length. We have the transcript of the 9-hour lecture on the Master Conspiracy Thesis available on one of the website links that I will be happy to refer to your listeners who write to my email address, whm@earthlink.net. And also, we have video and audio tapes of the shorter 3-hour version of the seminar.
And, of course, it's very interesting. If any of our listeners want to learn more about the Illuminati, you're going to have to go to the older British Encyclopedia Britannica. And, of course, what they did in the more recent issues of the Encyclopedia Britannica, they simply removed the references to the Illuminati and to the Carbonaria, which was an Italian secret society associated with Masonry and, of course, with the Illuminati. And of course, the Illuminati then infiltrated the Masonic lodges of Europe and was able then to continue and to even after the original Illuminati was driven underground, why the Illuminati continued to exist within the upper echelons of Masonry, both in Europe and here in the United States. And the fact that most people have never heard of that simply reflects how effective the control is today over what the American people read and believe. So the Illuminati was very, very real. And if anybody would like to verify that, there's a wonderful book we offer called Fire in the Minds of Men. In fact, if you read President Bush's second inaugural speech, he refers to that phrase, fire in the minds of men. Where does it come from? It comes from an article, a book written by Dostoevsky about the world revolution. And there is a world revolutionary movement. It's been going on for literally hundreds of years. It began with the American Revolution, followed by the French Revolution and the series of revolutions in France and then in Italy, and culminated with the Russian Revolution in 1917 and the Cuban Revolution in 1959-1958. But it persists even today. It persists. It's going on right now in Nepal, where we're backing the Maoist rebels there, but then we always back the communist rebels as we destroy the existing government. But we can't let the American people know that, because we're supposed to be the good guys. And people do not understand that we brought Fidel Castro to power in Cuba, knowing full well he was a communist. And if you doubt that, I have a great interview I did in 1980 with the ambassador to Cuba, Ambassador Smith, and you can actually see that on our video of the World Revolution, where we go into the writings of James H. Billington, the Librarian of Congress, where he lays out the whole background of this world revolution. He belongs to the CFR. But his book is excellent, except he tells you it didn't come to America, this movement, but that really isn't true. We know it was here because we got information on it from his secretary. We weren't supposed to, but Dr. Cuddy and I actually got information on the Clintonian Illuminati written in 1803, and that's available through our Radio Liberty as well. So,
and that was also the subject of a book, that one of my four books, called No Civil War at All, 80 Years of Conspiracy to Destroy the United States. And the Clintonian Illuminati was an early effort made by the Illuminati agents who were working in the United States after 1789, after the Constitution was ratified, to try to bring the same revolution, destructive revolution, to America that they brought to France.
Right, and because they were working through the Jacobins. The Jacobins were right here in the United States.
Yes.
Now, you actually wrote a book. I've never seen that.
I have your other book
that you wrote on foundations. Tell me about this book on the Illuminati here.
Well, I have four books. One was Clandestine, the story of our mutual dear friend, the late Delmar Dennis, and the fine work that he did in bringing to justice the murderers in the Ku Klux Klan in Mississippi who killed Michael Schwerner, Andrew Goodman, and James Cheney.
And that was, of course, the story of Mississippi Burning, which you've seen on television, and it's always a lie. They never tell you the truth. Delmar Dennis, of course, was a Christian minister who gave up everything and eventually, broke up his marriage and he was driven out of his church. He was a minister there. But he was trying to expose the communist influence in the civil rights movement that killed those three civil rights workers. But I bet you never heard that on CBS.
Well, there is one nice thing that has happened in recent years, in the last decade, and that is that a movie came out in 1996, a much better movie, called Ghosts of Mississippi. And if that movie's available at Blockbuster, it's been on TV, a lot of people have seen it. it turned out to be very accurate. And it was the story of events that occurred in Mississippi from 1990 to 94, namely the prosecution of a man named Byron De La Beckwith for the 1963 murder of Medgar Evers. If you see that movie, you will see the district attorney in 1990 in Mississippi, played by Alec Baldwin, looking for new evidence to reopen this prosecution because Beckwith simply got away with it. In the movie, you see his assistant bring in a book, and the book has a quoted confession from the killer boasting that he got away with the murder. The book you see in the movie with the quote was my first book.
Really?
That I wrote in college and got published a year after I graduated. And that was the story of Delmar Dennis' work as an FBI undercover informant in bringing the murderers of Schwerner, Goodman, and Cheney to justice to some extent in 1967. I quoted everything he told me. And one of the things he said, I was at a meeting as an FBI informant. I was at a meeting in 1965, and there was Beckwith, and he boasted in very ugly terms that he had killed Evers and gotten away with it. And he urged us to do the same thing. So they found that book in 1990 in Jackson, Mississippi. It had been out of print for 13 years. They found my book, and they used it to call the grand jury to reopen the prosecution. And so in the film, you see them find my book, and then they go and find Delmar Dennis, who is portrayed by name in the movie. Delmar, as you and I both knew him, Stan, was a much more impressive man than the actor who portrays him. But the movie's basically accurate, and it shows you that if it hadn't been for Delmar Dennis, Beckwith would not have been sentenced to life in prison in 1994, 31 years after the murder.
And of course, Delmar was actually the publisher of my first book, AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, and of course he helped me get published. Foundations, Their Power and Influence, which we've kept in print ever since then, and it was a great loss, personal loss to me when Delmar passed away.
Yes, but at least this movie I'm referring to, which turned out to be, for a Hollywood movie, remarkably accurate, gave him a little bit of the credit he deserved.
Now, did they actually convict De La Beckwith at that, or was it a subsequent trial?
No, the trial that is portrayed in the movie that took place between 1990 and 1994 was the conviction of Beckwith for the 1963 murder of Evers, and he was sentenced to life in prison, and he went to prison, and he died in prison.
Okay, fine. Now, then there was another trial here recently. Maybe that was on the murder of the three civil rights workers.
That was right. That was Edgar Ray Killen, one of the Klansmen who had been prosecuted by the federal government for the murder of Schwerner, Goodman, and Cheney, and had not been successfully prosecuted. And because of Dennis being the continually brave, heroic person he was, and because of his courage resulting in 1994, in the prosecution and conviction of Beckwith, the state of Mississippi went back and re-prosecuted Sam Holloway Bowers Jr., the real mastermind behind the Klan organization there, who was an admitted former communist. And that's all discussed in detail in my book. And they prosecuted him for another murder, which the state of Mississippi had failed to prosecute him for in the 60s, and they put him away for life. So even after Delmar passed away in 1996, his courage and his wonderful work were still bringing these people to justice.
And Chris, it took a lot of courage to speak out against the Klan in the South, at least when Delmar was doing that.
Oh, yes, absolutely. It was very, very, very dangerous for him. There were attempts on his life.
What people don't realize is the Klan was originally organized by a man named Albert Pike. Albert Pike's statue is in Washington, D.C. there. He was a Civil War, I think it was a general.
He was the Chief Justice of the Klan Supreme Court in Tennessee.
And, of course, he was the man who was the major organizer of the Scottish Rite Freemasonry.
Yes, that is one of the most embarrassing presences of Albert Pike, but there are many other things about Albert Pike that are very embarrassing also.
Right, and of course, but the thing is that here, the man who organized this, the Ku Klux Klan, also, established all of the various rights, all of the various degrees of Scottish Rite Freemasonry, but they won't disown him. They have a statue in Washington, D.C., and where's Jesse Jackson when you need him?
I know. I think that just a lot of these people don't know very much about him.
Well, anyway, he was a very evil individual.
He was a miserable, miserable person.
But, of course, the communists used the Ku Klux Klan for many years.
Yes.
Why? Because they would commit the atrocities because, of course, they wanted...
To promote racial hatred and violence so that there would be an excuse, as Martin Luther King said and as Sam Holloway Bowers, this Klan leader, said he learned as a member of the Communist Party. They wanted to create this racial hatred and violence to justify the federal government to come into states like Mississippi and impose federal control and martial law.
And I think that's really what's so important. You must understand that all of these things are engineered to justify more power to the federal government. And I have articles appeared in 1963 in the Communist newspaper. I'll be glad to send those to anybody who'd like to see them, where they talk about their plan, and everything was a new federal law, a new federal law, a new federal law. But their goal, and the goal of the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergers, and the Trilateral Commission, their goals and objectives are all the same.
Yes.
Centralization of power and destruction of individual freedom. Well, let's go to Rick, who's calling from Wisconsin. Hi, Rick. How are you doing?
I'd like to ask your guest, first off, are you getting a buzz in this line?
Yeah, a little bit, but go ahead anyway.
I used to be a member of the John Birch Society, and I still get the New American. And I'm 1 year younger than Bill, but I got into the Birch Society after the downing of Korean 007.
Mm-hmm. And right after September 1st, 1983,
right,
when the Soviets shot down Korean Airlines Flight 7 with 280-some victims, including Congressman Larry McDonald.
Right, and the one thing I've wondered about, the Birch Society has kind of dropped that issue. Even in their catalog of materials, you know, videos and books, there's absolutely nothing about that. Last September, there wasn't anything in the New American. I just kind of wondered why they seem to just drop that.
Well, in issues of the New American, in which the information provided by Anatoly Golitsyn has been presented and summarized, regarding the ongoing continuity of the KGB and the decades-long disinformation scheme that Golitsyn revealed that they would use to convince the West that communism was falling apart and that the communist world was fragmented, when in essence it was all propaganda and bluff and performance to deceive the West. They did discuss this because this was an example of Soviet strategy and Soviet ruthlessness, and being able to shoot down an airliner and kill Americans and kill Koreans and get away with it. Remember, President Reagan stopped Aeroflot Soviet airline flights for a brief period of time. That was the only price they had to pay for killing all those people, including their number one enemy in the U.S. government, Congressman Larry McDonald, and the cream of South Korean intelligence, which also happened to be on the same plane.
But I don't take the position that they were killed.
Well, Rick, we have a four-tape set on the downing of 007. We actually have copies of the various reports that came out from the Senate Foreign Relations Committee on Larry McDonald. We carry a book written by the father-in-law, one of the men who was on the plane, and I agree with you. I don't think he was killed, and I think we should never let the American people forget that they never recovered his body or any of the other bodies. How did they all disappear?
Right.
And believe me, the crabs don't eat the bones. But they know, for whatever reason, they've decided not to cover that, okay?
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much. Okay, that was Rick calling from Berlin, Wisconsin.
Yeah, well, I might say, just to be fair, the New American has aired some of the thesis about the plane being brought down. They have had issues where they aired this and reviewed books that presented it. they just cannot, you know, they're not omniscient, and they cannot, you know, provide information they don't have.
Because there have been,
Stan, as you probably know, a lot of false leads provided on this subject.
And there have been, and I think New American is a fine magazine. I read it through from cover to cover, and certainly I enjoy the articles by a good friend, Bill Jasper, and by Norman Greig, and many of the others. It's an outstanding magazine. Of course, there were two magazines. One was Insight, and one's the New American. Great magazines. But of course, Insight published some things that obviously got the CIA upset, because all of their advertisers suddenly wouldn't advertise with anymore, and they went under. And now at least we have the only remaining good magazine is The New American.
I would agree.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Bill, you've got 3 minutes to sort of wrap up this first hour, and then I'm going to have to do our closure, and then we'll get started with the second hour. So, basically, of course, we've been talking about how the United States has consistently, and people in the United States have consistently financed communism. And then, of course, we were talking about the episode with the civil rights movement, and how the civil rights movement was really used to centralize power in Washington, D.C. And the communists worked within the Ku Klux Klan, and our government knew what they were doing. But the American people were never allowed to know that so many of the atrocities committed during the civil rights era were intentionally created simply to create this support for new federal legislation. Would you agree with that?
Yes, well, it's the same strategy. We're talking about an ongoing conspiratorial strategy that goes back to 1776 to consolidate total power over the entire world through a world government, and to concentrate power within individual countries over the citizens. And that strategy consists of causing problems and then imposing the solution, not solving the problems, but people in government impose a solution they have in mind in the first place that they want to impose, namely more power in their hands. So if someone would like to contact me and examine more of this historical evidence or evidence regarding the period since 1989 and the continuity of Soviet power since then, despite the propaganda to the contrary, they can contact me at whm@earthlink.net or call me at 310-275-3194, and I'll do my best to lead them to this information.
And of course, Bill's traveled throughout the world. He's done everything he could to try to begin to put together the pieces of this puzzle. And, of course, I think he's come to the same conclusion that I have, and that is behind all of this. There are powerful spiritual forces that are motivating and energizing the people who have embraced this, a desire for a new world order and a new world religion. Their goal is the destruction of the United States. Their goal is the destruction of Christian civilization. They have a dream. They have a dream that one day there will be a perfect utopian world under a ruling oligarchy, and of course as it was in described in Plato's Republic, where certainly marriage will cease to exist, all children will belong to the state, and of course there will no longer be any problems at all. We'll live in a perfect utopian world. The only trouble is, I don't think that's ever going to exist. Do you, Bill?
No, this is put forward to lull idealistic, naive, gullible people into supporting these objectives.
Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and we've got Terry calling from Sun Valley, Idaho. I'm going to ask Terry if she'll stick on the line, and as soon as we get back, we'll put her through to our special guest. But right now, this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and if you're out there across America and you listen to our program and you agree with me that we're involved in a spiritual battle that's being carried out, that's being fought on a political and ideological and cultural battlefield, that there really are powerful spiritual forces behind everything going on, we hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And if you have not yet read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or seen the video or the audio tape on that, I suggest you do it, because I think better than anything else, it will begin to focus your attention on the spiritual forces that are motivating the people who belong to the secret societies, who are creating the world in which we live. And when you understand how powerful these secret societies are, when you understand their control over the media, and we carry a wonderful book on the media called The New Media Monopoly by Ben Bogdakian, a professor at University of California, and you realize that five mega corporations control 95% of the media in America, you can understand why these things are happening. Another great book, and we've kept this in for many years, is called Foundations, Their Power and Influence, written by Rennie Wormser back in 1958. The book has been actively suppressed for so many years. We carry a book entitled Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time, which was so good that the somebody came in and bought up the publisher back in 1967 or 68 and destroyed the plates of the first half of the book, so the book could not be reprinted. And if you doubt that, we actually have an interview with the author, Professor Carol Quigley, who was Bill Clinton's mentor, where he tells about how the plates to his book were suppressed. The book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. So there's so much information there that's available through our ministry. You can go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Or if you'd like to get certainly more information, perhaps a catalog, we'd be glad to send you one free of charge. If you'd like a copy of our newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. We hope that many of you, of course, will go to our website. You can listen to our programs 5 hours a day on the Internet at various networks. We're on actually 4 separate networks. And, of course, if you listen 5 hours a day, you won't get much accomplished. But we talk to people all across America who really do listen 5 hours a day. One lady has speakers in her kitchen. Other people have portable earphones that they can actually go anywhere in the house listening on the Internet through an FM broadcast. We have all sorts of means of getting the information to you. Our job is to get you the information so you can tell other people. We are not called to win this battle. We're called to be the watchman on the wall, as described in Ezekiel 3 and 33. We're to let people know what's going on, and hopefully it will lead to a great revival in America. I returned to the Lord after being away for a long period of time when I really realized what was going on, and that was motivated me to accept the Lordship of Jesus Christ. If you have not accepted it, give it serious consideration. Because the longer I live, the more convinced I am that God does rule in the affairs of men. So please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers. But pray for Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Our guests this evening is William McElhenney, and of course he comes to you with a tremendous background. He's been investigating this world conspiracy we talk about for the better part of 40 years. And so we've got Terry calling from Sun Valley, holding on for some time. Do you have a question, Terry?
Yes, from what you and your guests have said, would it be possible to say that one of the reasons people say that race is not a resolved issue because the civil rights movement hasn't, when I say, been aired out the Masonic or communist influences that kind of undermined or infiltrated it?
You're speaking now of the race issue specifically?
Yes, and I guess the civil rights movement. I read Alan Stang's book. It's very simple, which gave me a great deal of information on it.
Yeah, Alan Stang was a great trooper, a great patriot, and he's still around. He's doing talk radio on the Republic Network. This program is actually being broadcast on this evening. How would you respond to Terry?
Well, as Terry knows from reading my dear friend Alan Stang's wonderful and very important book written in 1965, it's very simple: The True Story of Civil Rights. The communists wanted to create racial hatred and violence in the United States for the purpose of promoting communist objectives, and they were willing to do this by infiltrating the leadership or forming the leadership of so-called civil rights and black power organizations working among black Americans to try to create hatred and resentment toward white Americans. And at the same time, as I detail in my 1975 book, Clandestine, Delmar Dennis, the FBI undercover operative who penetrated the White Knights of the Ku Klux Klan of Mississippi and helped bring to justice the Klan murderers in a number of murder cases. My friend Delmar Dennis found out that the man who was running that most secretive and violent of about 14 different Klan organizations during the 60s, a man named Sam Holloway Bowers Jr., admitted that he learned the strategy that he said he was using in Mississippi to create hatred and violence in the white community against black people, and to create as much violence and hatred as possible, that the result would be that the federal government would have to come in and impose martial law over the state of Mississippi.
But of course, he learned that when he was a communist at UCLA.
Right.
He was asked
by Delmar Dennis,
right,
and several other lieutenants, where did you come up with this idea? And he said, I learned it when I joined the Young Communist League or the Communist Party at USC in Los Angeles in 1947. And before I published the book in 1975, I found independent corroboration that he was, in fact, telling the truth about that.
And so, Terry, they play both sides. They get the whites to hate the blacks, the blacks to hate the whites. Just as you can see this today, they're trying to get the Americans to hate the immigrants here. They're not the enemy. They're simply cannon fodder. They've been encouraged to come. They just want a better life. I don't blame them at all.
Right.
We've impoverished the people of Mexico after NAFTA. We took the poor dirt farmers who grew corn. We put them out of work by flooding Mexico with subsidized corn paid for by American taxpayers to create the problem we have today. And we'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we're simply pointing out that how they want to play one group against the other. They want to play the blacks against the Hispanics, the whites against the Hispanics against the white. This whole illegal immigrant movement is funded by the Ford Foundation that's been funding communist activities in the United States going back well over 50 years. That's covered so well in the book Foundations, The Power and Influence, written in 1958 by the Council for the Congressional Committee, the Reese Committee, that was commissioned by the 83rd Congress to investigate the Great Tax Exempt Foundation, specifically Ford Foundation, Rockefeller Foundation, Carnegie Foundation. And, of course, what they found out is that these foundations were funding the communist movement, specifically the Ford Foundation, one of the greatest culprits. That's why I don't drive a Ford vehicle. Anyway, anything else, Terry?
Yes. I was wondering, do you see any parallels with the civil rights movement here to, say, the ANC movement in South Africa?
Oh, absolutely. The organization, African National Congress, that has taken over South Africa with the help, with the pressure and help of the United States government, forcing the prior government of South Africa to capitulate and give in to the ANC. The ANC is totally controlled by the South African Communist Party and always has been. It is a Soviet operation. It has nothing to do with the interests of black people. It had nothing to do with the desire to remove legalized segregation or apartheid. It had to do with bringing Soviet control over the mineral wealth of Southern Africa. And now, unfortunately, as a result of American foreign policy, South Africa is in Soviet hands.
And, of course, what the fascinating thing was when Nelson Mandela, who, incidentally, the election was as phony as could be, they printed 80 million ballots for 40 million people. And before the polls were even closed, we'd already announced that Nelson Mandela was going to win because we put him in power. He wasn't the choice of the people. He was the choice of the politicians in Washington, D.C. But when Nelson Mandela then was became the president, they had the ceremonies, he being the president, who was there? Fidel Castro and Hillary Clinton. And communists from throughout the world were celebrating their victory.
Yes, and they've continued. The ANC leadership in South Africa has continued to share resources with and visit and commiserate with the communist Irish Republican Army in Ireland and the PLO in the Middle East.
And, of course, really, then, of course, they support Robert Mugabe, who was a communist. He was trained in China. He's a Maoist. Trained in China. He was the man that we installed in Rhodesia. The people there voted for Bishop Bezuweyo. We were just talking about what happened, certainly the relationship between the communist government in Rhodesia, in South Africa, supports the communist government of Rhodesia. Robert Mugabe, who is the president of Rhodesia, was installed by our government. The people there, in a free and open election, elected Bishop Mezuweyo. We didn't want him. He was a moderate black. He was not a communist. And so we demanded another election. We didn't like the result of the democratic election. It was free and open. And then they terrorized the people there and said, there'll never be peace unless you vote for Mugabe. And he is a Maoist. We promised the whites there that if the rule of law ever failed, if the court system the democratic regime was ever usurped, we would come to their aid. And you can see how we've come to their aid.
For over 50 years.
Right.
Since the betrayal of the anti-communist governments of Cuba and the Dominican Republic by the CIA and the American government, we have toppled or unfunded or abandoned our anti-communist allies in the governments of these countries, one after another, and we have installed and financed and built up the Soviet stooges and communist instrumentalities under Soviet control that ended up ruining these countries and turning them into Soviet satellites.
And, of course, we brought communism to China, and by putting an arms embargo on General Chiang Kai-shek and undermining the nationalist Chinese, we brought Fidel Castro to power, and anybody who doubts that needs to see my interview with Ambassador Smith, which we're just getting around to putting out. And then, of course, we brought the Ayatollahs to power in Iran. We brought, of course, the Sandinista to power in Nicaragua.
Right.
We brought Mugabe to power in Rhodesia.
Example after example after example, the same strategy and the same tragedy that it was all done by our government with our tax money.
And, of course, they're doing it right now in Nepal. So when you understand that, everything makes sense. We did it in Southwest Africa. We did it in Angola. We did this in Zaire, although we haven't opposed the Marxists there, but we backed the Marxist government, and that government, that society is just in total chaos. Terry, did you have anything else you wanted to ask?
Yes, I want to know, what do you see, what would be the positive effect of, say, black Americans who've invested so much emotion into maybe some of the mythology of civil rights, if they could hear what you have to say, and what publications do you offer that can clarify this as well?
Well, I would suggest the New American Magazine, and I would suggest the fine work of black Americans like Azola Foster, who wrote this wonderful book, What's Right with America, and who ran on a third-party ticket for vice president, and who's an outstanding critic of the phony socialist totalitarian so-called black community leadership that we always hear from through the media. There are, and Reverend Jesse Lee Patterson, and there are other black speakers who speak out very boldly on these subjects and expose what's going on and accurately, and they deserve the support and the awareness of more and more of the black community, and they are reaching more people. Many of these people have been speakers for the John Birch Society and its Speakers Bureau.
Okay, anything else, Terry?
No, just continue doing what you're doing. It's just very eye-opening.
Well, thank you so much.
And Terry, if you get them to read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, they'll begin to understand the spiritual aspect of what's going on. And then, of course, if you get my material on the AIDS epidemic targets blacks. There is a genocidal agenda, and, of course, AIDS has a predilection for blacks. That is why the vast majority of new AIDS cases in the United States are in blacks. They better understand what this is all about because their lives and the lives of their children are at stake. That is why in Botswana today, 46% of the pregnant women who come in to be tested, same thing in Malawi, 46% are HIV infected. That's the greatest public health tragedy of all time, or the most successful genocidal policy. If it's a public health tragedy and failure, you would think they'd change the public health approach, but they're not doing it. Thanks so much for calling.
You're welcome, Doctor.
Let's go to Bart calling from Carmel. Hi, Bart. How are you doing?
Fine, sir. Thank you very much for taking my call. And Mr. McElhaney, I'd like to ask you a question. In recent days, I've been thinking a lot about one concept that I have, and that is that, of course, the object is to bring America down in order to bring in the world government. And nowadays we're under attack from so many different directions. It's so blatant. It's so horrendous. The globalists have always known that Americans have become so fat and happy and lazy and so dedicated to their endless enjoyment and entertainment. As long as they can keep the people comfortable and happy and entertained and fat and gorged and well fed, they'll withstand almost any abuse of their freedoms and constitutions. And I personally believe that the Illuminati globalists know that they will keep Americans fat, dumb, and happy right up to the last minute. And I believe that we are very close to that last minute right now. What do you think?
Well, yes, the process of demoralization, demoralizing the citizens in a country so that they become, shall we say, more agnostic or unprincipled in abandoning their traditional beliefs and values. This is a process that is part of Soviet strategy. It's called the Gramsci strategy, named after an Italian communist. The purpose is to use the media and their influence in the media in a country to promote material, programming, books, literature, plays, and, of course, in our case, television and movies, that deliberately undermine traditional moral principles and values, and promote destructive values that demoralize the citizens and cause them not to end up believing in anything, and therefore they go along with whatever the government tells them to do. So the process of demoralization is part of Soviet strategy.
You can't destroy a society with a strong moral foundation.
That's right. Robert Welch, the founder of the John Birch Society, taught people like myself more about the history of the communist conspiracy, but he said the greatest problem we face is moral decline.
And I think, Bart, that you ask if this is close at hand. I believe that we're going to be heading into very difficult times financially. And, of course, it's that old adage, it's the best of times, it's the worst of times. It's the worst of times because of the suffering this is going to bring. It would be the best of times because maybe people at that point would begin to take a second look at what's really important and would begin to listen to people like you and I who are trying to tell them that this did not happen by accident. It happened because we've had two successive chairmen of the Federal Reserve System who have planned to destroy the a value of our currency. They both come from the Trilateral Commission. All you have to do is look at the logo of the Trilateral Commission. The inner part is an upside-down broken cross. And, of course, the outside is 666. You know, once they began to see the symbology on the back of the dollar bill, the pyramid, the cap by the all-seeing eye, the logo of the World Future Society, which until recently was simply 666, or the logo of DARPA, you get that up on the internet, you know, the all-seeing eye looking out over on the world, the emblem that we show on some of our catalogs, I think on a Millennium catalog, that is a 32nd degree of masonry, which shows a man and woman combined into one standing on a serpent that overlaps the world. It's very obvious what they're talking about. The foundation of masonry is on the serpent.
And
the serpent that dominates the world. And you can look in the right lower quadrant of your
international scale, more warfare, strife, and conflict on the international scale, more terrorism within individual nations and internationally, all of which will justify the remaining requirements of a total world government police state, which include internal passports and ID cards in individual countries, total surveillance mechanisms to be and systems to be established to control and keep track of the movements and finances and resources of all citizens, and then eventually to consolidate total power with centralized national police forces, confiscation of all weapons in the hands of citizens. And then they've got all the power, and we're in a prison.
And I would also say don't forget the rider on the pale horse, which is the logo of the Council on Foreign Relations.
Mm-hmm.
And closing, I would just say it can be hard to awaken a comfortable sleeper, but with some difficulties and discomfort, perhaps, then we'll see a larger...
And we have to show how this can be stopped. Namely, putting pressure on the House of Representatives, which appropriates every nickel that is used to spend to promote all these things.
Amen. And we're going to have a chance to vote for an excellent candidate for Senate, a United States Senate. Certainly, it looks like Senator Mountjoy is going to get the Republican primary, and if he does, he'll go into the election in November against Dianne Feinstein. And Senator Mountjoy is one of the few men I know of impeccable integrity.
I vote for him every time. Thank you, gentlemen.
God bless. Thanks so much. All right, fine. Our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Our guest is William McElhenney. We're talking about the world conspiracy, and Bill and I really haven't talked in many years, but we both come to the same conclusion that behind all the things that are going on today are powerful spiritual forces. For back of all that foes have plotted, back of all that saints have planned, back of the schemes of men and demons is a higher hidden hand. Warp and woof are heaven created, every pattern good and wise, oft perplexing by heavenly, earthly standards, but good and wise in heavenly eyes. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is William McElhenney, and William's been studying this just almost as long as I have. I got started in 1962. He got started in 1965.
That's because you're 3 years older, Stan.
I'm a lot older than that. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. It's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question for William, because certainly he's got a tremendous amount of wealth and insight into the things that are going on, and nothing as it appears to be. I mean, why are we so intent upon going to war with Iran? I mean, what they have to their east, the Chinese communists who have nuclear weapons to their south. They have the Pakistanis who have nuclear weapons to their north. They have Russians who have nuclear weapons. The Chinese and the North Koreans have both threatened to attack America. But we're not talking about going to war with them. We're talking about Iran. Oh, they're terrible. We can't let them get nuclear weapons. It's all right that India has nuclear weapons. In fact, we're going to do everything we can to help them, you know, despite the fact that they violated the...
Look at the remarkable little example of Yevgeny Primakov. Look at the example of the architect of Soviet Mideast strategy, the man who was the Soviet Union's, the Soviet secret police, the KGB's director of operations, in charge of the PLO and all Middle Eastern strategy. Right before American troops invaded Iraq in 2003, he is in Baghdad meeting with Saddam Hussein. He is there meeting with Saddam Hussein, and he is supervising the Soviet military personnel that was controlling Saddam Hussein's regime, and then shredding documents to make sure that control was obscured when our troops marched in. And then Yevgeny Primakov, along with two or three other Soviet nationals, like Alexander Karpov, the former KGB station chief or resident in Washington, and Marcus Wolf, the director of the KGB in East Germany that set up the spy network system that controlled all of the citizens of East Germany and now has infiltrated all of West Germany, these people have become consultants to the Department of Homeland Security to establish a terrorism information and surveillance network for the United States.
A little wonder, of course, then, that the logo for DARPA, DARPA was, of course, going to be doing exactly that thing. They total awareness of network was what they called it. It was the emblem on the back of the dollar bill. But, of course, then the eye at the top was looking out over the world. That is the most amazing emblem. I'm sure you've seen it, haven't you, Bill?
Yes, of course.
You have to understand that there is not a dime's worth of difference between the Soviet government and our government. They have worked together all along. The KGB and the CIA worked very closely together all during the Cold War, but we cannot let the American people know that.
And even going back to the days of the Office of Strategic Services during World War II.
Look up the book of the Brotherhood of the Rose. It's an amazing, amazing story. Well, this is Dr. Stan here, and we're simply talking about how secretly the CIA and the KGB worked together all during the Cold War. Supposedly they were enemies, but you had to make the American people really believe that the Soviets were the enemy, because if we didn't have an enemy, how could you get the American people to pay their taxes? How could you justify the massive military machine that we built up and all the money invested in technology that would be eventually used not to spy on the Russians, but to spy on the American people? And that's what it's really all about, but you can't let the American people know that. Lincoln Bloomfield, writing for an article for the State Department, you know, back in 1964, and you'll find the quotation in John Stormer's book, None Dare Call It Treason, Lincoln Bloomfield said, you know, if the Soviet Union wasn't there, the major force that is justifying our foreign policy would be lost. We have to have an enemy. Well, we've got Dan calling from Houston. And Dan, do you have a question or comment?
Yeah, great. With the John Birch Society, I've been a member for years, and I absolutely love the John Birch Society. and I've had incredible experiences. One of our chapter leaders, his house, somebody drove their car into his house. Lucky, fortunately, he wasn't killed. And then one of the leaders, John Birch Society, has been given, the guy I respected, a lot of bull, and the guy just got disgusted and quit. Now, I want people to join the John Birch Society because I think enemies of it are joining it to destroy it.
Well, I have to be honest with you, my friend. I don't know the circumstances or the people that you're referring to, so I really can't comment on those circumstances or those people or those experiences you're referring to because I don't know them.
Okay, Dan, I certainly can't comment on it either, but I would tell you that you have to be very, very careful because almost every organization that possibly can will be infiltrated, and I'm sure they have tried to infiltrate the Birch Society. I feel very comfortable with John McManus as the head. Now, I want you to know I withdrew from the Birch Society back in the late 1970s because I wanted to do what I do. And I believe the only way we're going to reach the American people is by talk radio, and I wanted to be able to do that and say what I believe. So, so I'm no longer...
That's what makes us individualists, Dan, that we all want to do it our way.
Right. And so, anyway, Dan, anything else you wanted to say?
Well, I just think John Birch Society is the only entity this country's got, and I can't see why anybody would do anything different.
Well, of course, maybe, remember, Radio Liberty does have an outreach. I wish the John Birch Society 40 or 50 years ago had gotten onto talk radio and reached the people. That's the only way we're going
to
change.
Well,
We
like to think that Robert Welch influenced people like Stan and myself. And that's why we're talking to people on talk radio.
Well, I'll never forget something that Welch used to say. Upon one man's life it has fallen, a light that doth not depart, and a look or a word he has spoken, wrought a flame in another man's heart.
One more thing, please?
Sure, go ahead, Dan.
I'd like to say, I think the real way to say this country is either First Amendment right to petition, which frankly nobody's doing that in the John Birch Society. There's a website to do it, where you go there and you print the petition, you sign it, and you mail it to a post office box. There's about several thousand responses so far. To close the border, the one petition by the fence, and to make English official language. Another petition to make it illegal to fly any flag but the flag of this country, in this country, except for consulates and embassies. And that's that website, if I could give it,
go right ahead, Dan.
Yes, sir?
Go ahead.
www.closetheborderNow.com.
Okay, at closetheborderNow.com. Of course, my feeling is that the leaders of both political parties have no intention of solving the problem because the leaders of both political parties are globalists and they are energized by dark spiritual forces intent upon the destruction of America, and I'm including the President of the United States in that, who has no intention of trying to solve the problem because he wants to merge the United States with Mexico. When you understand that, everything makes sense.
The people controlling government policy do not want to solve problems. They want to worsen and prolong problems.
Absolutely.
To justify the phony solution of total power in their hands, which was their goal from the beginning.
Amen to that. Thanks very much for calling, Dan.
God bless you.
God bless. Bye-bye. All right. And again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or 464-8295. Our guest this evening, William McElhenney. We're talking about the world conspiracy. There is a world conspiracy. And behind that conspiracy are powerful spiritual forces, indeed, I believe, powerful demonic forces intent upon destruction, destroying what was once the land of the free and the home of the brave. We'll be back in just a moment here and welcome your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, William McElhenney. We're talking about the world conspiracy, and there really is a world conspiracy out there. There are people in Moscow who want a world government. There are people in Washington, D.C. who want a world government. There are people in Beijing today who want a world government. And the leaders of the entire communist world, they all want a world government. And the leaders of the Trilateral Commission and the Bilderbergers and the Council on Foreign Relations and the Masons and the Rosicrucians and the Satanists and the New Agers and the Theosophists and right on down the line, the Skull and Bones, they all want a world government. Why? Because that has been the age-old plan of the mystery religions. And the secret societies that date back to antiquity date back to the time when they built the Temple of Babel. And, of course, you can go to Europe today and you will find many places posters that show the incomplete Temple of Babel, never completed because God intervened. And, of course, if you look at those posters, they're surrounded by stars that are inverted. They're satanic stars with the point at the bottom, representing Mendes, the head of the goat. And if you go to Strasbourg and today, which is the home of the European Union, you'll find a building there, built after the pattern of the design of that poster. An incomplete building, or it looks like it's incomplete, of course. It really, they did finish it, but they finished it to look like that Tower of Babel. And this is what we're really reinstituting. We're going to recreate the Tower of Babel and unite the world in opposition to God's commandment and God's hope and God's plan for humanity. Do you have any thoughts on that, Bill?
Well, the European Union is a regional world government already established, which is a new level of straitjacket-like socialist regimentation imposed on all of Europe and now on Britain, on top of the socialist controls and government regulation already in those countries from their native governments. But now small businesses and schools and shopkeepers throughout Europe and in Britain are being dictated to by Belgium-based bureaucrats and having to fill out reports and comply with extensive and minutely detailed regulations that are imposed on them. And we were told that all of this, going back to the 1960s, was just a series of treaties to promote free trade. But it's actually a regional world government for all of Europe. And it's part of the strategy of having a world government, having a European-wide currency now, in effect, the euro, and that they will then merge...
Hold that stuff right there, Bill.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and William was talking about the European Union, which is a regional world government. And it's one day, of course, is to be merged with the North American world government and the South American world government and similar governments in Africa and in Asia. It's all part of a long-range plan. And, of course, they lied to the people of Europe, and they insisted this was not to be any sort of a government. It was just a trade arrangement. And what they said with their lips was a lie. They knew it was a lie, just as they're lying to the American people today about what NAFTA and CAFTA are all about and the free trade zone of the America. And our leaders lie to the American people, and they're backed up by the controlled media and certainly by the great tax-exempt foundations. And until the American people understand that our leaders lie to us, and no, but nothing's ever done to them. They violate our laws. They send our boys to be slaughtered in other countries, and nobody's ever held responsible. 3,000 Americans died. On September 11th, was anybody ever punished? Was anybody ever fired? Was anybody ever chastised for failing to take action to protect those 3,000 people? No. And then we get into Afghanistan, and it's only to be a short war. We went there to capture Osama bin Laden, but they intentionally let him get away, and now we're trapped in Afghanistan, and now we're trapped in Iraq, and well, it was all a mistake, but, well, we're there, and we can't leave, and is anybody held responsible? When will the American people realize that we're being lied to by our media? We're being lied to by our leaders of both political parties, because both political parties are involved in this scam. You never want to give the suckers an even chance. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our guest is William McElhenney, and of course we're talking about this world conspiracy. Bill, would you like to get your telephone number, your website out once again, your email, so people can get your website?
Yes, we've covered the map so broadly tonight that I hope we'll have a chance sometime to get back to, you know, you asked me a question an hour ago about my book on the Civil War and Lincoln's assassination. There's so many examples of this conspiratorial strategy. I covered it in my book on the ACLU, how the ACLU, funded by the tax-exempt foundations, promotes social problems, an increase in crime, and that ends up justifying more dictatorial government controls on a national level. My book, The Tax-Exempt Foundations, carried on the research that was covered in Rennie Wurmser's earlier book that you have available in reprint. And this is one area where the policies are imposed and continued through government, through the academic world, and all of the agitation movements and organized pressure groups are funded and supported by the major tax-exempt foundations, all of them to promote socialism at home and world government internationally.
Well, I would like to talk about, you know, your book on the Lincoln assassination. That's always been one of my favorite stories, because the American people don't understand there was a conspiracy behind that. They five people.
The same network of secret societies, beginning with the Illuminati, that brought the French Revolution to France and brought and created the communist movement in Europe in the first few decades of the 19th century, also tried to destroy the new American Republic as soon as the Constitution was ratified by promoting secession movements. And the first attempt was called the Whiskey Rebellion in 1794, and it was put down successfully and non-violently by President George Washington, because he had such unanimous public support. All he had to do was come out and condemn it. It was an attempt by French agents of the Illuminati working in secret societies called Democratic Societies in Pennsylvania to break part of the new United States away and to form a confederacy and a separate warring nation. A series of these furtive attempts continued in the first half of the 19th century and led to the creation of one and the attempt to create two or three other confederacies to break the American Republic up into separate warring nations, to bring in foreign troops and reconquer the North American continent. And there was a very fine American president who, like George Washington, was determined to stop this imported conspiratorial effort to destroy the Union. And Abraham Lincoln did stop it. People today look back and like everything that he did, the fact remains he stopped it. He stopped this effort to destroy and to completely destroy the American Republic and rend the Union. And that was more of an objective to him even than abolishing slavery. And he paid dearly for this, because an agent of the Illuminati's branch in the United States that had brought on the so-called Civil War took vengeance upon him personally, and that agent was John Wilkes Booth, the assassin.
Do you think that Booth actually died in the fire, or do you think he escaped?
I have researched that. I don't claim to know the answer to that. People paraded a mummified corpse around at carnivals for years and years and claimed that it was Booth's body. His granddaughter, Zola Foster, Forrester, believed that it was, that he possibly had escaped. But the most important thing that we know about Booth is that he was an agent of a paramilitary organization called the Knights of the Golden Circle. And the Knights of the Golden Circle and its predecessor public movement called Young America were branches of the Illuminati conspiracy in America, trying to break our country up into separate warring nations.
And I think it's really so interesting that most Americans have never heard of the Knights of the Golden Circle or the secret societies that existed at that time, because you're not supposed to believe in conspiracies. Anybody who talks about conspiracies and secret societies obviously has to be some sort of a right-wing wacko who honestly believes that they're black helicopters, that there was a conspiracy behind the assassination of John Fitzgerald Kennedy, and that, of course, you know, there were no hijackers in the planes that crashed into the World Trade Center on 9/11. And so they marginalize you, they ridicule you, but the truth of the matter is, there have always been secret societies. They're here today. The president belongs to a secret society that's so secret he couldn't talk about it. And, of course, the man he ran against him in 2004, John Kerry, belonged to the same secret society. And the fact that you would have two people from the same secret society that probably don't have more than a couple of thousand people at the most, maybe 1,500 people in it today, the fact that you would have two people from that same secret society running for the presidency, one of the Republican and one of the Democrat, if you figure that statistically, it's probably about 1 in 10 or 15 trillion.
Yes.
And so how did it happen? Well, ladies and gentlemen, there really are secret societies who control both political parties, and that was one reason why they had to suppress Professor Kara Quigley's book, Tragedy and Hope, A History of the World in Our Time. And Quigley was actually a professor at Georgetown University. He was Bill Clinton's a mentor, and Bill Clinton mentioned that he was his mentor when he accepted the Democrat nomination for the presidency of the United States in July of 1992. And Professor Quigley, on pages 1247 and 1248 of his book, says, you know, the most carefully kept secret is we've got to have both political parties the same. So the people can vote out the scoundrels every 4 years, but it won't make any difference.
It won't make any difference because the policies will continue uninterrupted.
Absolutely, and that's what it's really all about. And, you know, we play this little game, oh, the Republicans are good because they're pro-life and they're pro-family values, and the Democrats are bad because they're pro-choice and they're, you know, they support homosexuality. But, you know, when we get the Republicans in, they've been in power now for 6 years, and almost 6 years, and, you know, they've not saved one life. The president could end abortion tomorrow with an executive order. He certainly says he doesn't have to abide by our law. He can do whatever he wants to.
Exactly.
So he could pass an executive order and just outlaw abortion tomorrow if he wanted to. He's never done it.
Instead, we've gotten the most massive increase in government power, government bureaucracy, taxes and regulation, and government spending since the last 60 years.
And, of course, the Republicans are supposed to be in favor of cutting government and a balanced budget because those Democrats are terrible spendthrifts. George Bush is the largest spender there's ever been in the history of our nation.
That's right.
Well, anyway, what do you think should be done now? We've talked, you know, for a couple of hours now, but what is the solution? How
you do such a good job, Stan, in educating your listeners. People who listen to this program and have been listening to the good work you've been doing understand the problem very well. They may not be postgraduate scholars on it. They may not have researched or written about it, but they do understand the essence of it because you keep presenting it so well. They know the problem. I feel there is a solution, and that is, as Congressman Larry McDonald taught us, the House of Representatives controls the appropriations of every single nickel spent by the executive branch. And the executive branch of the federal government is what is the engine that promotes all of these things we're concerned about in terms of increasing intrusive dictatorial government power over citizens, interfering with business, making it more difficult for people to make a living, for businesses to stay in business, and promotes, in terms of foreign policy, aggressively the funding of communism and the promotion of world government and the sacrifice of U.S. sovereignty. All of this is paid for by the House of Representatives. Members of the House of Representatives are pragmatic politicians. They like to get reelected every 2 years. If you put enough pressure on them through organized grassroots letter-writing campaigns and exposing their voting records to the public, to their constituents, if you put enough pressure on members of the House of Representatives you can get them to cut off funding for many of these things the executive branch does without having to repeal an existing law or get the Supreme Court to do something to stop it. You can cut off the funding for it, and they won't have any money to operate on.
And I think
that's the approach that I feel is the area where we have the greatest leverage in accomplishing something. The House of Representatives has the leverage because they control the money.
Well, of course, you know, but we send congressmen back there. I remember David Dreyer. I remember David Dreyer when he was a good conservative.
Now he sounded he sounded like a super Republican conservative, and then he went to Washington, and he was taken to the top of the mountain and shown the kingdoms of the earth.
Amen to that. And, of course, he has just sold out all the people.
Totally sold out in domestic and foreign policy. He's competing to be as bad as John McCain.
And that's pretty bad.
That is terribly bad.
Well, but I agree with you. I think that we have to work to get people into the House of Representatives. And if they're not doing the right thing,
pressure.
I don't care if they're Democrats or Republicans,
you know,
get rid of them.
Pressure the ones who are there, you know, get some good guys elected, promote, help the ones that have a good voting record. But by all means, don't worry. Just put pressure on all of them that are there, so that they will be afraid they're not going to get reelected unless they change their voting pattern.
And, of course, I remember something that Dan Spoot used to say, and that is that most politicians aren't dedicated to the right, or they're not dedicated to the left. They're dedicated to staying in Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And, of course, as Everett Dirksen said, you don't see the light until you feel the heat. And if they know that you're going to campaign against them personally and you're going to target them and you've got a lot of help and a lot of friends, they'll vote the right way. And if they know that if they do not vote to uphold the Constitution but they've sworn to uphold, they're not going to get reelected.
That's
and I'll
right.
tell them that Ron Paul gets reelected because he has a message that gets through to the people, even though they've gerrymandered him into a predominantly Democratic district. There's an awful lot of good Democrats out there who feel very, very strongly about what's going on. So don't let them divide us. They want, of course, play the Democrats against the Republicans and the conservatives against the liberals. It's all a game. As long as they can keep us divided, they can have us conquered. And I agree with you, of course. We've got to get in. We have to, of course, work within the political system. We have to educate people. We have to understand it's a spiritual battle being played out on a political battlefield. But we have an obligation to be involved. And what do you say to the Christian who says, well, I'm not going to be involved because it's all in God's hands?
The Christian has an obligation to condemn and oppose moral unrighteousness. You have a moral responsibility as a Christian to oppose unrighteousness.
Well,
and as far as I'm concerned, as a Christian, the efforts that I've made in the last 40 years, just like the efforts you've made, are the fruits of the spirit of my Christian witness.
Amen to that. And of course, I always say to those Christians, you don't think you have to be involved. No, I don't have to be involved. I say, do you have a fire insurance on your house? Why do you have fire insurance on your house if it's all up to the Lord? Do you have a health insurance for your family? Why do you have health insurance if it's all up to the Lord? You have those things because you want to try to protect your house. You want to try to protect your family. And, of course, you should want to try to protect your country. And if you're not involved, then you become part of the problem.
That's right.
Well, again, let's get your telephone number, and of course, people get in touch with you.
Like to pick any of the subject matter we've talked tonight about and get the context and references for further material, please contact me first at my email address, and then I can write back to you and refer you to my website locations where you can get a lot of additional information. My email address is WHM, that's my three initials, WHM@earthlink.net. Earthlink is one word, EARTHLINK. WHM@earthlink.net. Or you can call me and leave your email address and I can send them to you. My phone number is 310-275-3194.
Now, are any of your books still in print?
I have my Civil War and Lincoln's Assassination book, which I published myself. That's still available, and it's possible to find clandestine ACLU on trial. on the internet now, because it's the internet makes possible finding out of print books. My Tax Exempt Foundations book is a little harder to find, but people have even been able to find that on the internet too.
All right, and then what was your third book on the fourth book on the ACLU?
ACLU on Trial.
Have you ever thought about getting those reprinted or putting
them
in paperback?
I'd love to. The publisher of my first three books, Clandestine, The Delmar Dennis Story, ACLU on Trial, and the Tax Exempt Foundations, the publisher Arlington House went out of business.
But who has the copyright on those?
About 1980. I hold the copyright. We could put out an updated edition.
All right. I remember, of course, the story of Clandestine. I think it's so important. People understand that the whole civil rights movement was manipulated by the communists with the full and active support of our own government. Because certainly we totally infiltrated the communist movement, and the great tax-exempt foundations were financing the communist movement. They already did. So you create an enemy, and of course they commit terrible atrocities, and you point to that and say, gee, we need a whole series of new federal laws. That's how we're going to solve the problem.
Right.
We're going to gut the Constitution, centralize all power in Washington, D.C., and then we won't have any more problems like those we created. Well, Dr. Stan, Bill, you got 3 minutes to wrap up tonight's program.
Well, your listeners are blessed by the good work that you do, and they are much more well-informed than many other Americans. If they want more ammunition to reach their fellow citizens and want to know the background context or documentation on some of the things we've discussed, please contact me at whm@earthlink.net. or 310-275-3194. I'll do my best to get that information to them. And remember that the executive branch of the federal government carries out most all of the foreign and domestic policy problems that we're talking about, and promote the destructive objectives of this conspiracy more influentially than any other agency. And if we want to stop them, Congress has the power to stop them. The House of Representatives pays every nickel of their budget expenses, and we can cut off the money.
And I certainly agree that that's an important first step. I think that the whole idea of the foundations, Bill's book on the foundations, picked up where many worms are left off. You must understand that so much of what's going on today is financed by the tax-exempt foundations. The effort to change our educational system and use it to dumb down our students. All a part of a program by the tax-exempt foundations. Who is you thinking who funds the organizations for illegal aliens, LULAC and MALDAVE here in the United States? The Ford Foundation. Why would they do that? Because they want to create the immigration problem, of course. They want, millions of people demonstrating on the streets, first peacefully and then, I fear, violently before very long. And then, of course, the great tax exempt foundations have funded so much of what goes on in America.
They created the entire environmentalist movement.
Right.
For the purpose of promoting total control over private property in the United States.
And, of course, the mischief that the great foundations have done. You have to understand that the vast sums of money that is really tax-exempt money, it should have been paid in taxes, it's not. It's being used to destroy America, to push Marxism, as Rennie Wormser said, as Congressman Reese said, in the foreword to the book Foundations, Their Power and Influence. I had to wonder what part the great tax-exempt foundations played in pushing a Marxist philosophy and try to destroy the love which every American should have for our way of life.
Yes.
And that's really what it's all about. They have been using our tax-exempt money, the Fords, the Rockefellers, the Carnegies, to push a Marxist philosophy and destroy the love which every American should have for the United States of America.
But they can be exposed.
Hold on. Well, I guess this evening, William McElhenney, we're going to have to let you go. Did you have a parting thought before I let you go, Bill?
It's always good to have a chance to visit with you because you do an excellent job in informing your listeners.
God bless you. Thanks so much. And we'll be talking to you again. Maybe we can go over all of your books some evening again.
I'd love to do that.
Bye-bye. Okay. Our guest this evening has been William McElhenney. I hope you enjoyed the program. Certainly one of our great patriots and a great researcher. So then, of course, this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. We really depend upon those of you who listen to our programs to help us as we reach out 5 hours every day and then on weekends trying to reach people and get them educated about the spiritual battle in which we're engaged. So if you'd like to help us, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We hope many of you want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and get our monthly newsletters and certainly our tapes. And then we hope that many of you will perhaps want to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or our latest video entitled World Revolution, where you'll actually see the interview I did in 1980 with Ambassador Smith, who was the American ambassador to Cuba at the time, that we brought Fidel Castro to power. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we brought Fidel Castro to power. If you'd like to understand the population control agenda and the genocidal program, which is the official policy of our government, why the video is called Plant Population Control. It's either a video or an audio tape. Certainly, if you'd like to understand the secret societies that were here when America was founded, the video is called The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings. That's The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings. That wonderful video by Chris Pitto, we actually carry that, I'm in that, but despite the fact that I'm in it, it's very good. Chris has another couple of videos, one of them I'm in, the Megiddo 2, but Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2, tremendous information that you need to have at your fingertips. If you want to understand the satanic influence within music, you need to get They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. The 3-hour, or 4-hour, or 10-hour, either DVD or video. And I will promise you, you will never look at the same, at the world through the same eyes again. The satanic movement is alive and well in America and is being, of course, programmed into the minds of our children through the music they're hearing, not only at music concerts, but many times in our Christian churches. If you'd like to understand the satanic movement in America, we have three pamphlets we put together called The Occult Hierarchy. That's the occult hierarchy. The occult hierarchy, part one, part two, part three. We have a four-tape set, Satanism and Deliverance, a four-tape set on Aleister Crowley and his friends. We have a book on Aleister Crowley. Now, there's some things in that book I disagree with, but overall the book is quite good, and so we circulate it, although I do have a disclaimer in the book. It's called Blood on the Altar. Here is a Satanist. A very powerful Satanist, the 33rd degree Mason, who had been taken into the upper echelons of Masonry, the secret and occult and satanic levels, and it's all there. And of course, this will give you the background of the man who is called the Beast, 666. Again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our website, radioliberty.com. You can listen to our programs on the internet there. Please pray for Radio Liberty.